Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, can you guys hear me? You hear this? All right. Special teams, I thought, stepped up today. Started with Lammons and the fumble that took place. Matt Wright stepping in, which is a real tribute to Brett Veach and his group. I was proud of the offensive line for the job that they did. They had a certain mindset about them, and they came out and presented that for four quarters. Patrick, Kelsey, Marquez, who am I missing? Juju, and then those two runners, man. Really three runners. They bared down and really did a nice job, which is big. You play this group, and time of possession ends up being a major league thing. You don't want Tom to have that ball too long and for too many snaps. However, our defense, Let Spags had a nice plan for him. They're very talented. They were able to get their receivers back, and I'm sure that's just going to – they're going to keep getting better as it goes on. So when they have more time to work with one another. But listen, all in all, when you can get three phases working in the right direction, it's normally a good thing for you. And tonight was a good thing. So that time's yours.
Pretty much the only thing I think we unanimously were agreeing on headed into Chiefs Buccaneers was that we didn't have any real sort of concrete idea of how this game would go. But even as we were texting up until kickoff, I'm Joshua Briscoe here with Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser, the whole band back together. Our group chat right ahead of kickoff. Nate, you were asking how we felt. Seth, you were saying you had no idea. I was saying that I was worried about both team sets of wide receivers for different reasons. One thing that none of us said at any point in the entirety of this week, anywhere that was ever recorded, was the Chiefs would put up a 40 burger en route to a rout of Tampa Bay that was not as close as the, yes, 41-31 final score. Even when the games are kind of normal, they're weird for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about that over the course of this next hour or so here on Time's Ours. Again, Joshua Briscoe, Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser. Nate, you made it presumably to Tampa and back, all okay. You witnessed some football, wrote a story, doing a podcast. What else could you ask for?
Exactly. And all did it in a pretty smooth manner, hopefully, for people who read on The Athletic and are listening to this. Yeah, I guess the one thing that I was kind of right about was I was concerned about either team getting down double digits and yep. The ability to come back in a quick manner. I didn't necessarily, see it go this way, but what my normal routine is, I watched the game, obviously, I sort of consumed the live all 22 from the press box. And then I'm observing these sort of small moments that may, sort of further reveal the big, themes or the overall thought of what the overall outcome is as we move from week 3 to week 4 to now week 5 in this season. And then I go back to the hotel and I watch all the highlights of all the other games. Just so I can be aware, because even when you're watching Red Zone, you're not real. I mean, that's just cocaine. That's crack. let me back up. That's crack. Okay.
That's way more dangerous than regular cocaine, Nate.
But like watching all the highlight, like watching a condensed version of most of the games, that's like smoking a cigarette, we're just outside taking a break, seeing what.
It's smoking a pack one at a time. Red Zone's exactly. Smoking a pack with a blowtorch all at once.
While going 100 miles an hour down the highway.
Yes.
No, that is a perfect analogy and one that I think most people can relate to. So it's like, hey, the Eagles, really good. Wow. Creative things going on with the New York Giants, but cool. And so some of these things sort of highlight like how dissimilar the game I covered was, or how similar it was for maybe that overall, you know, version of the week. Then I fly home. Then I watch the entire Chiefs game on the television broadcast. And I don't know if many fans picked this up, or viewers, or our listeners, but guys, the game was over before the first offensive snap. Because do you want to know what Todd Bowles said that I clearly read on camera? Like, clearly read his lips.
No.
And this was after the poor rookie running back for the Buccaneers fumbled the game opening kickoff.
Yeah, and you hate to see a rookie fumble a kick really early in the game. It's really unfair. The Chiefs should have given that one back.
So the tables have turned.
Turntables.
Todd Bowles, God bless him, sees the Chiefs offense run out to the field, realizes, so they get to start the half with, they get to start both, they get to start both halves with the ball. Is this legal?
I mean, sorry, I know the words he mouthed the words, is this legal?
Like, guys, I know we are a good defense, but do we have to do this? Like, they don't even do this on All Madden. Hey, which, by the way, when you play Madden on All Madden, they don't make you fumble the opening kickoff. So
no, and you would immediately come on.
Reset.
Immediately, yeah, you're out. You're like, nope, that's bull. That's like if your first play of the game, your quarterback gets hurt, if you keep injuries turned on, you're like,
right.
Nope, yep, we're done here.
That's not how I would have spent my time.
Yep. That's not what happened. Boom.
This is before the first snap, so people can go back and rewind and watch this if they DVR'd it, or if they want to go to, you know, NFL Plus. This man said, damn. And then his next words were, I don't curse a lot, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that there are children nearby.
Uh-oh. All right, hold on. This is a get your kid. This is a clear out the kids section. Seth, cover your ears.
His words were, damn, f*** me. And for the next 59 minutes.
Kit, bleep it, Kit. 5.5 minute mark. Somebody tell Kit to bleep it.
You could just, like, it could not have started better for the Chiefs. It really could not have started worse for the Buccaneers. And as I wrote in The Athletic, and I just, you know, this entire game was just through the lens of 20 months ago in a pandemic, the worst night in the Mahomes era, and obviously the conclusion of the Run It Back tour, where they didn't reach the final destination. So in two plays, they accomplished what they couldn't do for 60 minutes in the most important game of the 2020 season, which was get into the end zone. So much like, you know, as we talked about last episode, as much as Dave Toll felt like, hey, with that muff punt from Sky Moore, we gave so much confidence to the Colts. You literally saw that happen with the Chiefs scoring in two plays and then Mahomes sort of igniting everybody around him to be like, we are going to dismantle this team in front of a national televised audience. And I think Todd Bowles knew it before the first Chiefs actual official offensive snap.
Yeah. You could,
which curse word did that make you say, Nate or Seth? Sorry, go ahead, Seth. What was your favorite curse word?
You know what? When Mahomes threw that pick at the end, I said rats.
Whoa, can't dump that one too. Bleep it.
It was definitely, you know, I was nervous about the game because I really didn't know what to expect. It really is interesting how much a thing like that can kind of loosen things up early on. And frankly, we saw the reverse of that, right? I mean, last week, the Colts, you could almost feel them like, well, hey, maybe we could win. Like, you know, just like, and it's not that I think the Chiefs didn't think they could win, but there was a little pressure. There was a little, it's like, oh, well, they're going to spot a 7, huh? And they're like, okay. And they're just, it really is. I understand momentum isn't something that can be quantified and over time doesn't really seem to exist. But I don't care about your science. What I know is momentum does exist, you heathens. And you can see it like just like, oh, come on. And it was just kind of the boost the Chiefs needed. And then when it really was bad, though, was after the first couple offensive and defensive series. And you were like, so basically the Bucs can throw to Mike Evans.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep.
Whereas the Chiefs are just going to go ahead and do whatever they want. And on the rare occasions the play doesn't work out, Mahomes is going to do something stupid. It's one of those nights. And so, I mean, it was you could feel it. You could really feel a shift there. And watching the rest of the game was just downright delightful, to be perfectly honest.
We had a caller on the post-game show last night who specifically shouted out as a Times Ours listener. So shout out to Parker for this analogy. Parker called in and said that he called that a Patagonia game because it was a quarter zip.
Ooh.
The Chiefs unzipped about a quarter in Sunday Night Football in prime time. And I like that a lot.
A little risque.
Yeah, it was pin up. You want to imagine what might happen in January? Because here's the crazy thing. This game, again, as I said in the open, like this was not a back and forth 2 points or, you know, 7 points, 10 points, 3 points, 7, 10. The Chiefs just got themselves out to a pretty commanding lead pretty much right out of the gate. 21-3. It wasn't over. Obviously, the Bucs went on to score more than 21 points themselves, but the game was pretty commanding at that point, even as the Bucs were getting back into it. That Clyde drop, the L'Jarius Sneed fumble turns it around. Even when it was at its riskiest, its shakiest right there before the half, even that was one play lived for Tampa on offense. So controlling wire to wire is a heck of a way for this game to have gone. Where do you guys want to start in terms of the thing that you take away as being the most noteworthy, particularly in light of what we've seen from this team now through nearly, thanks, 17 games, nearly a quarter of the season. What's your quarter season takeaway, Nate, especially in light of last night?
Yeah, so this was sort of like, if I wanted to push the story more about the future versus like that moment and obviously the past, which I felt was what was required, because the changes were so it's wild. It's like, and I don't think I put this in the story. It was late, kids. Eastern primetime football. The Buccaneers just run the ball once in the second half. Because guys, this is getting to be like high school levels, like, when can I go home? So I don't think I put this in the story, but you know, one stat that is similar from Super Bowl 55 is the fact that Mahomes was sacked 3 times in that game and he was sacked 3 times last night. Everything else about the trenches was so different. Mm-hmm. Not only just about the personnel on the offensive side for the Chiefs, and the fact that, like, you know, Ndamukong Suh was not obviously a part of the Buccaneers. But to me, it's like, if you want to push this forward, this is who the Chiefs are supposed to be. It's the blueprint is through the offensive line. Everything was informed based on the disastrous catastrophe that happened in the Super Bowl to the Buccaneers. And, you know, ever since that moment, the Buccaneers have been the only team in the NFL that could laugh at the Chiefs offense. Honestly, like, Shaq Barrett was honest, and I appreciate that because he had a right to feel that way. Like, dude, the last time we played this team, we changed the entire course of like how the rest of the league was going to, you know, operate against them. Or we gave the blueprint to like beat the Chiefs or to at least be competitive, you know, even if you don't have the same talent level we do on defense. Well, now the Chiefs have had their chance to respond, and the offensive line, with power running, with counters, with dudes just pulling ready to hit whoever crosses their face. That's what the offense has to be. It can be sexy because you have the most talented quarterback. You still have the best tight end in the league. You still have one of the most imaginative creative play design, you know, collaborators. I mean, these are producers putting out hot tracks, okay? Like, whether it's Bienemy or Reed or Nagy, like, or Joe Blaymeyer, like, who you want? You want No ID? You want you who you want? Who you want? You know? Hey, can we get, you know, I don't want to give too many references here because I don't know how much I'm straying away from people, but like, these are collaborators who are adjusting to trap music and the idea of like soulful sounds and the idea of like up tempo, like crescendo, decrescendo. Like, they can do so many things musically that, like, yeah, sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, but when it sounds the right way, the way that they intend, it's beautiful music. All that to be said, if we're talking in zipper land, you got to unzip something. Like, something's got to be behind the zipper. And what behind the zipper is the offensive line. Everything is built off of girth.
Good Lord.
And the Chiefs' offensive line should be doing this more times than not for the rest of the season. There are no more, there, you know, as long as these guys stay relatively healthy, there are no more. There's not really a major excuse except for Von Miller's in 2 weeks. So, like, that's the most recent one I can find. Because, guys, have you seen Von Miller? Holy smokes. I thought, like, hey, that game against the Rams, that's just a scheduled loss. They were motivated. He's as healthy as he'll ever be. In the slot, this man was eating people. And then Lamar got spooked. I'll just say it. Like, Lamar in the fourth quarter was like, have you seen Von Miller? He's always in my face. Okay.
Well, it's a little harder. Offensive coordinator would do something, anything to slow down pressure. It's like, you know, and that's like, here's the deal. Brown still looks a little, not quite as laterally quick, even as he was. So I still think he's struggling with some stuff, although he looked better. And I know we'll get there. But like, all it took was Shaq Barrett beating Orlando Brown around the edge once, and the Chiefs mixed things up after that. And to be fair, you know, Brown had a lot of good snaps too against Barrett, but it was like, no, oh no. So we're going to make sure that you don't just get alone in space against him just that easily. I don't know, maybe you could, you know, do some things. Maybe you could slide some protections. Maybe you could chip a little bit with your tight end. Maybe you could roll your quarterback a certain direction. Maybe you could run that direction to cause the pass rusher to hesitate. I don't know. Literally anything to just protect your tackle from getting overwhelmed and your quarterback from getting destroyed. And then just, like you said, spooked. Because really, it's not, I mean, obviously a single sack, pressure, hit, all those things matter on that one play.
Right.
But when you get a couple of them and it suddenly affects the entire game, that's when you lose.
So Josh, I just want you to imagine that Patrick Mahomes, like, whatever gets your imagination going, that's the piece of wardrobe. But it doesn't look good if it's not on the right body. And the body's got to be the offensive line. Like, it is so boring to say, but it is, like, it's so clear that, like, and I know I thought Clyde gave me a pretty good answer, sort of, you know, reshaping their own emotions going back into Raymond James Stadium for the first time since their Super Bowl loss, but also from the standpoint of the coach basically said, hey, I did poorly. Special teams did poorly. Chris Jones said something that was, you know, whatever. Hey, the Colts had a 7-foot tight end. Cool. ultimately, what this comes down to is you have to make a decision. What is something that I can simplify and unify as quickly as possible from A to B? And Andy Reid basically just said, hey, boys, if our offensive line plays well, we can beat anybody. And he proved to be right, because they just beat the best defense in the league statistically entering last night's game, solely because the offensive line was just as good as Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm. And just worth noting something here that, they put 41 up on them. They would have put up more without, like, poor Clyde. Like, he's been helping more in the pass game, and, you know, he the run game currently fits kind of what he's good at when the offensive line is playing all right. And then he just drops, like, Andy Reid rolled out one of his unzips, as it were, and just this gorgeous play to give Clyde, like, you'll never be that open again. Well, no, he probably will, because he plays for Andy Reid. So it'll happen again at some point. And then he just, you could tell the just the, and Mahomes didn't deliver him a great throw. And that happens. Now, obviously, he should have caught it. But, like, he turns it to us, he drops it. You could just see him in his eyes, just like, oh, come on. So, like, that was a touchdown, I think, because there was nobody near that man. And he's showing the ability, like, when he's in space, like, he's a smaller guy, so defensive linemen and even linebackers are able to stop him pretty well. But because of the way he's built, secondary players have problems with Clyde. And he was going to humiliate at least one dude if there was someone near him. But instead, he's like, ah, I'm going to jump. And then MVS couldn't come up with a relatively tough catch that Mahomes was trying to prevent him from getting his head taken off. Which, by the way, Tom Brady could maybe do that for Mike Evans every now and then. Like, because, and to be fair, Mike Evans is a cyborg. Like, he hurt a couple Chiefs defenders. Like, they're hitting him. They're like Justin Reed, I know what happened to him. And maybe it was Thornhill. I can't remember who the other, but, like, they hit him and you see them after, and they're like, good God, that guy's solid. Like, it hurt them. But, man.
Except for the time that Thornhill hit him in the back of the end zone and then all the air deflated out of Mike Evans because it was such a cruel, dirty hit.
Oh, my goodness. That, you know, like, and seriously.
Honestly, Juan Thornhill should be in prison. That's what you're going to say, right?
The thing that's a bummer, because every now and then with those hits, like, if they know that the ball is incomplete, okay, fair enough. You know, because you don't need to do it. But sure. He had no idea. What's he supposed to do? Like, lay off?
He was ducking down to hit him at a safe level so his eyes could no longer see if the football had been caught or not.
Yeah.
Like, imagine the inverse of that play happening where he catches it and Thornhill goes, I'm pretty sure he drops that, and then just pulls up, and then Mike Evans just stands there in the end zone holding a football untouched.
Yeah, looking confused. You can't do that, but Chiefs had a few drops. They should have hung 50 on Tampa. Like, Tampa never really. And then Mahomes, obviously, with that throw that I'm pretty sure he wishes he could get back. That was like, what are you doing, man? Like, that was bad. That was bad. And fair enough, it was a rough pick. It was essentially an arm punt that the punt team did not cover particularly
check,
well.
Check out your phlegm from Seth Box.
Yeah, who had 15 minutes?
Was that in the, is that in the I or the in category? which row is that in?
Who also had Seth did not hit the record button.
Oh no. Is that real?
Yes.
Oh, Seth.
I'm so sorry.
Seth.
This is why
that's
all
right.
This is why we use Zoom.
This is all, first of all, this all needs to stay in. Second of all, can't Seth is very sorry. Third of all, dear listener, I hope you get to hear all of this where we are in mid-season form. 20 minutes in, the first time Seth realized he wasn't recording was when he checked to look at his recording to see how long it had been before he was flimmy into a microphone.
Yeah, to make a joke. I'm sorry, Kent. So what analysis was I going to provide as I sit here? So I'm going to try to push through.
Are you recording now?
Am I supposed to now?
Yes! Sure.
Yes.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Okay. I'm recording now, and so... As I was saying, whoever had 5 seconds before I was phlegmy would be absolutely correct. So I'm gonna try to push through as my brain screams at me what a moron I am. So
hey, listen, your brain doesn't need to do that. I'll do it after the show.
Yeah. Anyway, the point overall was that the Bucks never really stopped the Chiefs. And you could see it really is built around, like Nate, like you said, the offensive line. And that's why the Colts game was such a struggle in some ways, is they lost up front consistently. And they didn't really, with the way the offense is currently built, and I'm sure that'll change moving forward as different guys learn their roles and that kind of stuff, they really didn't have a plan for if they were getting whooped up front by the Colts. And that was part of the offense's struggles, I think. Now, there was some self-inflicted stuff there, too. But really, I think that was a big part of it, is that this team is built around obviously Mahomes and Reed. That's always going to be them at the top. But it really is like Kelce and the offensive line next, where it used to be Kelce and Hill next. And if on the days where that works, and I think it's going to work most days, it's going to look a lot like that. I know Ted Wynn was putting out some video clips, and he just said, you can't stop this offense if they're going to run the ball like this. You absolutely can't. And it's the total truth. So that I would agree with Nate about that big overarching takeaway. And then also, I mean, one of the things I wrote about was just to show the number of times that the Chiefs, that the Bucs were kind of cheating towards the pass a little bit. And so the Chiefs just said, okay, you're going to give us a numbers advantage. We're going to run the ball for 7 yards. And now it's 2nd and 3. And it's really fun to watch when it plays out that way.
Yeah, I think those are the places to begin. I think you guys are dead on. The one thing that I would add that I've now mentioned a couple times on this show, I'm going to be the first guy to say the name of a player who is no longer on the Chiefs, but I think this might be the last time we have to do this. One more time, I want to look at this through a Tyreek Hill prism. And I kind of want to throw that prism away, because I think eventually it is making us do all of our Chiefs analysis through a kaleidoscope where it's like, hey, I mean, what are we even seeing anymore? If all you see when you look at the Chiefs is not Tyreek Hill, all of your analysis is going to sound like Bart Scott or whatever, right?
If you don't think ESPN on its Monday night graphics department is not going to put Tyreek Hill on a late first, early second quarter graphic, sorry, Josh, that's just not how this works.
No, it'll be there.
Hey, did you know the Chiefs without Tyreek Hill are, checks notes, lead the league in EPA?
Yep. And I think that the evolution might be that. It might be, hey, without Tyreek Hill, I think that's going to be probably the evolution of this. But I really felt like watching that game last night, It felt like the first full cashing of the check that they believed they were handed when they traded away Tyreek Hill, of what the offense could look like, not just without him, but with the investment in other places. And frankly, not just the offense, the defense getting the youthful rejuvenation that includes the first round pick of Trent McDuffie, who wasn't even out there for any of this, that Willie Gay is a keystone of, that he wasn't out there. Mike Dana has been one of the best defensive ends on this team this year. He wasn't out there once again. But the idea that Patrick Mahomes, a really strong offensive line, an evolved functional running game with a variety of useful backs, and then three tight ends who could score a touchdown in a variety of different ways, a bunch of pass catchers getting involved in different forms and in different depths of the field, like, this feels like what the offense would look like in a borderline ideal world. And that's a tough thing to pull off in any NFL game, much less against a team that had statistically the best, if not one of at least the best defenses in all of football, as you mentioned earlier, Nate, coming into this week. Like, that is a heck of an achievement to say, this is what it might look like if you're running this offense against air. Like, not that the Bucs weren't providing their feedback, but it was just working and in a variety of ways.
Yes, exactly. And
more multiple, some might say. I don't know. Some people might say that. I don't know. Would anybody say that it was more multiple?
People are saying that it was more multiple.
Like who, Seth?
Well, you know, I think I said it during the first 20 minutes when I wasn't recording. So I'm still mad at myself. I'm sorry. But
it'll be there. It's not right. We got the backups. There are many
people.
In the Chief North newsletter that I read this morning, and it was very good. But I do have evidence of me saying some of this on the post-game show before it was written. So keep your cease and desist to yourself, Seth.
It really is. It's more multiple. The Chiefs can win more in a variety of ways, and that matters a great deal. Because if you're multiple, that means no matter who the opponent is, you can game plan for them. I'm not sure they were as multiple even last week as they are this week, because the offensive line, that's the more known quantity, right? Now they were dealing with some injuries. That was a bummer. But they have other layers that they're trying to work in right now. Like, I don't know, maybe a better runner than they had last year. Maybe a couple of receivers with certain skill sets that they're finally starting to really unfold in the offense. How great was it to see Mahomes and MVS connect on a deep shot? Like, extremely good. You could see the plan come together and how all of those things are complementary towards one another. And the more of those things unfold, as it were, I guess unzip would be the analogy that we've stuck with. the more that I think I use the term unfold, you know, you're looking at all new things. It's like if you had, I don't know, like a quilt of some sort. It was all folded up very nicely in the corner. And then
unfold. We got a bragger over here.
Every time you unfold a piece, you see a little bit more of the pattern and how the whole fits together. And that's kind of what you're starting to see with the Chiefs. Again, through just four games, there's going to be ebbs and flows here. But that's that multiplicity there that makes you more varied against a team that really, for the Chiefs, with them being based entirely around Kelce and Hill, in addition to Mahomes, they maybe didn't have as many answers to.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Did I at some point in the preseason, did we ever talk about the phrase like backup plan? I vaguely remember mentioning it and also not being totally satisfied with it as a term, but just going back to the different ways to frame all of this, I just think it's really important where if you do end up with a day where you could have limited Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, what was, if again, not the backup plan, but the off-speed pitch or whatever.
Right.
Felt like the Chiefs had like five pitches last night that they could have gone to.
Yeah, and I just love the idea that, like, you're just watching natural progression of players, one in particular being Noah Gray. Like,
he's the next. I've got it. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about a couple of tight ends momentarily.
Yeah. Maybe so, right now. You know, this is what I understood to be the projection when they drafted him, right? Because the reason I called him, you know, a majestic white horse on a sandy beach is because, like, he was idealistic at the time of them selecting him in the draft. And by the way, they traded up to go get him, I believe. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you don't want to let those ideals, those visions, sort of go away going from year one to year two. You want to continue to, like, shine it up, you know, groom that horse so that he can trot across many oceans to where no one's looking at him, even though he's right in front of you, taking a snap that used to be for Blake Bell and still scoring a touchdown. The idea that they've shown you something on film constantly, but now Noah Gray is capable and trusted enough to do that role. If you look at the MVS deep shot that you guys just referenced, the guy running the corner for the cover two hole is Noah Gray, who is wide open. And I noticed that rewatching it, thinking like he didn't run that route at all last year. So they're getting little by little from what the idea of him was, move him around, can be a blocker. Can be someone you can use on short yardage. Hey, maybe could be an intermediate secondary option. Hey, this guy is able to process things mentally because he went to Duke and Duke realized He one of our best players, and quarterback just can't go five steps, get him the ball. We gotta make it simple by moving him around all the formations, being in the backfield, motion, all that stuff. So it was just a natural fit in for the Chiefs offense. And now he gets to learn it from not just Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, but now he's getting to learn it from Travis Kelce, and like some of those things are translating. So it's wild. And I think I'm going to write this later in the week, but just it's wild that their tight ends are just as good as their receivers. And I don't know how many teams in the NFL can sort of say that. You know, we might have one good tight end, you know, but our top three tight ends, maybe four, if Bell comes back and is serviceable again, that just as comparable as our four wide receivers, that doesn't seem ordinary.
Well, and also, I mean, what that lets you do from a personnel perspective, obviously, is you keep your heavy dudes out there, make it look like you've got a plan to go ahead and just slam the ball downfield a little bit, and then all of a sudden you've got some majestic white horses trotting down some sandy beaches, and you are, once again, dangerous in different personnel groupings, different ways you can attack teams, perhaps more multiple, some people are saying. Seth, now I want to make sure you're recording before you talk about the word multiple. No, we don't have to do that again, but... You get the Noah Gray belldozer play. You get the Jody Fortson touchdown. Fort season continues year round, baby. It's an epidemic in the best possible sense.
What if I told you I saw him line up in that formation? And I believe if you go back to Washington last year in the game that he ultimately had his Achilles injuries, it's a similar formation. He's only to the one side of the field. In the press box, I'm sitting next to Herbie Tiopi, and we both immediately say, there's the one-on-one mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-snap. And then I added, it's a natural slant. It's just a natural slant. And then they actually did it.
That's one of the most fun things when you're watching football is when you're kind of looking for something, like you think maybe you figured a little something out. Because we really are often watching stuff that's basically shrouded by the fog of war. We kind of might sort of know what we're looking at. But and so it's so fun.
No, Seth, this is war.
It's so fun when you have a moment where you're like, you know, I think this would be a bit of an edge, or I think this is what they're trying to build towards. And then you see it happen. And that's kind of what I wrote about after the game, which in 'tis the season to write about your priors, right? But just about watching the way that they were able to utilize different skilled guys in different ways that are all complementary towards one another, that just mean they can win with a huge variety of play calls and personnel sets. And that idea of being multiple in that way, it's just something that they didn't have last year. And maybe not even the year before, especially not the year before. And so it's exciting seeing that with MVS and Juju Smith-Schuster, who is not putting together a monster season statistically, but the physicality he adds to that wide receiver group, is in my imagination, is that noticeable? And not just on plays where he gets the ball. But then, you know, to tie it all together, like you said, you've got, you know, Jody Fortson, you know, the Chiefs might mismatch you with their third tight end. Crazy. You know,
it's just crazy.
That's cool. Like, that's the ability to say, hey, our third tight end. And I would argue that in terms of like a one-on-one route, in a one-on-one setting like that, you know, it's unfair to call him the third tight end because he is more of a mismatch than Noah Gray is in that particular situation. Because Jody Fortson, he's just really tall. He's just a big dude. And like Davis just had no chance. Like that just wasn't fair. And they did a great job breaking down why. I mean, it really is with that leverage, that coverage, it's just not fair. All he's got to do is turn and put the ball on him. It's hilarious. But that's what the Chiefs can do right now. is they might line up with three wide receivers and Kelce and spread everyone out and send the running back out of the backfield on a really good angle route. And what can you do? They might stack everyone up on one side, put Kelce on the other, or they might put Kelce right on the line and utilize him as a blocking tight end, which they did a few times. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the plays that I highlighted where what the Buccaneers did is they allowed for a light box and they brought a corner down, didn't even put him in the box. They treated Kelce like a wide receiver. And then you know what he did? He fired off the line and everyone was blocking. And it was the easiest like 6 yards that Clyde Edwards-Helaire has ever earned. And then he earned a few more. They can do all those things. And now they've also added another pitch. I like the way you frame that, Josh, in that maybe what they'll do is they'll just line up heavy with a fullback and run it right down your throat with Isaiah Pacheco. And there's not much you can do about it. And you can prepare for some of these things, but preparing for all of them at once, I'm not sure what defensive coordinators are going to do watching this film.
His name's Von Miller.
And his name
is literally Von Miller. With a sprinkle. I'll put some respect on your name, sir. I hope people know whose name's about to come out of my mouth. Because, like, sir, you're not Kirk Cousins, but I've kind of used you as, like, the defensive, like, Kirk Cousins-y. Like, what a sprinkle of Matt Milano. Just a sprinkle. on top of a Von Miller cake.
And that's what you can hope for, is that you have the personnel to win matchups in multiple places. Although I'll tell you, if Levante David can't win that, Matt Milano's not helping you.
It's why I referenced him.
Yep. You've got to hope that you can win that personnel wise. And it sounds bizarre to say it, like the Colts did. But really, how often is Trey Smith going to be playing hurt enough to genuinely impact his play and lose on a few bull rushes? I guess.
That's one of the things about the rest of the season is, like, you know, playing power football does demand, you know, a bit more from you physically than maybe, you know, some of the more elaborate blocking schemes that they've wanted to do in space, out of shotgun necessarily. If they play more power counter sort of stretch plays, the offensive line is going to have to hold up physically.
Since we're back on the offensive line, I just want to take one quick swing through here, because I'm sure when we mentioned the offensive line earlier, people were screaming at their phones. I need an Orlando Brown heat check from both you guys. I need your theory. I need your explanation. I need what he's worth. I need all of it. Nate, you said he's fine. Go ahead. You go first. You were very excited to answer that.
He's fine. You can give up a sack, guys. Like, the other guys are paid to. Like, it's okay. Like, it's totally okay. Remember last week, the sack that Orlando Brown gave up against the Colts was more coverage-based. Like, the Chiefs tried to take a deep shot. All three guys were covered because the Colts, like, you know, were, like... By the way, how can one team look so... I mean, I know how, because it's... I mean, we're all humans, and that's goes to our nature, by and large. But, like, the same defensive unit that was so disciplined and focused and determined to not get embarrassed in their home opener, just I don't want to watch the Colts anymore this year. I really don't. I don't even want to watch them boys. I'm sorry, y'all. I used to live there, and I don't even want to watch them boys anymore. Anyway, by the way, they're going to make me watch these boys on Thursday.
Did you see what, I think it was Nyheim Hines said, that, like, he pointed out the fact that every bleeping year they're just trying a new quarterback installed, and, like, it actually makes it harder for the rest of the offense. He compared them to the Titans. They've had Ryan Tannehill over there my whole career, and they look at them. And it's the first time I've ever heard anyone lustfully wish for Ryan Tannehill. It was his point I thought was really good. It was like, that probably does get hard for, like, a running back.
It totally makes sense. It's just amazing that he's saying that kind of on, like, the downswing of, like, probably Ryan Tannehill's time in Tennessee, which, hey, had some high moments.
And also, don't worry about it. Ryan Tannehill absolutely a Colts quarterback in 2020. I mean, he will be there in three. I would bet anything I could find on Ryan Tannehill finishing his career in Indianapolis. It's perfect.
That's a terrific bet, honestly.
Can he go to Carolina first? Then come to Indy. It can't be divisional inner trading, right? I mean, if Jimmy G can't go to the freaking, Seahawks, like, hey, Ron, I need you to serve a year with Matt Rhule. If he's still there, then you can come over to Frank Wright and them boys.
That's what it is. You got the path. Bang. Got it.
So with all that being said, I know that some people get upset when I write that Orlando Brown is a star left tackle. Let me remind you again, ladies and gentlemen, he is a top 10 left tackle in the league. He was on the Pro Bowl last year. He has the ability to play better than Eric Fisher. He's fine. Okay, and he's dealing with a knee injury that Seth kind of mentioned earlier, and that might be something, as I've said before, that is sort of nagging for weeks. And Andy Reid, I think, pretty much acknowledged that last week leading up to Sunday's game. So he's fine. He's better than half the other left tackles in the league. Did you see who's playing left tackle for the Indianapolis Colts? Just wanted, it could be worse. And I know fans are like, maybe he should have taken the contract. Well, that's his decision, not yours.
Good note.
And these things are, as we all need to understand, fluid.
They are fluid.
He could play better as the season goes along. He could play worse as the season goes along for a number of factors and circumstances. But Shaq Barrett got him on a snap. Dog, that's cool. Like, it was on a clear pass down. It's fine. Again, Von Miller is better than Shaq Barrett is right now. So, just if I'm just projecting in 2 weeks' time, if things don't go a certain way, Orlando Brown is still a very good left tackle.
For me,
things fine?
I would say that he hasn't been very good so far this year. But this is where, we expect players to play hurt, and then we, kind of go behind. Well, everyone's hurt. Not everyone's hurt the same way. There's being hurt in a way that really hinders your effectiveness, and there's being hurt in ways that just hurt. With Brown, I'm seeing a lot of upper body attempts at winning, right? Really trying to take advantage of his reach, really trying to take advantage of getting his hands on guys, getting a good initial punch and directing guys wide. Now, that's the way he's always won, right? But when you are really leaning into it, you run risks where guys might bounce off. And he also just doesn't seem to have quite the same punch that he did. And, that's lower body, right? You just, when you're not be able to put your entire lower body into something, you're not going to get the same amount of strength into it. So he hasn't looked as good as he did last year. I'm willing to see how it goes. He's given up, 20 pressures or whatever. And I would need to see what those pressures looked like before I would, sign off on that stat. And that's one reason why I haven't quite let it make the rounds, at least for me. But he is giving up more pressure than he did last year. At the same time, he looked better against the Bucs than he did the previous week. And I'm willing to say, yeah, a guy was playing hurt for a couple weeks. Okay, fair enough. Now, what do you do with him? Because that's, I think, Nate, where you're coming from is fans aren't really asking the question they think they're asking.
Correct.
They think they're asking, is Orlando Brown any good? But what they're really asking is he worth X contract? And those are two different questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he plays that this way for the rest of the year, would I sign him to $120 million a year? No, I wouldn't. Can he still help the Chiefs win the Super Bowl? Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are two different questions. And the problem is people are always trying to answer every question all at once. And maybe call it the Twitter effect. We think we've got a limited number of characters to think about at one time. So he's been against the Bucs, he was fine. Better than he was against the Colts.
Right.
And that was better than he was against the Chargers. And by the way, because there are a couple snaps. For one, he stepped on Noah Gray's foot. On one against the Colts. That happens. It looks terrible. It happens. Khalil Mack got him a couple times. But you know what? There are a couple of snaps that no one, these were making the rounds last year. Maybe I should do a better you know, a better job of this, where he freaking just slammed Khalil Mack to the ground. And you're going to get some of those. So I'm a little less, I mean, I don't even calling it pro Brown, because I think what you're asking people to understand is like, let's not overreact to a couple times he's played hurt when it looks like he's a little bit on the upswing. And he really, it's not like he was terrible against the Bucks. At least I don't think he was. So, everything gets lumped together. And this year, you're not going to be able to talk about Orlando Brown without talking about whether he's worth Trent Williams' money. And that's just the nature of the beast, I guess.
And is Trent Williams hurt, Seth?
Trent Williams is indeed hurt, Nate.
It's a violent game, and they have no other options. So stop asking the question. You need, like, I think some people need to acknowledge that, like I said earlier, it's fluid. He's not as good as you want him to be. Okay, you said the same thing about Clyde Edwards-Helaire however many times. But they're 3-1. We think they can get better, and they have no other options. Which was why the negotiation part of the offseason was so fascinating, because they had no other options.
Right.
So, and if he knows that, they obviously know that. And they're trying to obviously work in this partnership to obviously have maximum success on both ends. But like, guys, I watched the Jacksonville Jaguars tackles yesterday. It wasn't great. if you just watch the Chiefs, I understand that, but I think I'm sure you know this, Josh. Like, it just goes to better serve your, I won't say opinion, but just like your overall knowledge. If you just watch other teams around the league, because you wouldn't want the Raiders left tackle. You wouldn't.
No,
you wouldn't want. The Jags have had the number one pick, I don't know how many times. The left tackle's kind of a work in progress. Like, hey, why did Daniel Jones get hurt? Because the left tackle kind of stinks. So it's, you have the most talented quarterback that helps Orlando Brown, but Orlando Brown helps Patrick Mahomes, because as Seth mentions, I think Orlando Brown, along with Andrew Wiley, like a lot of those guys played inspired yesterday. And that is something to be commendable for, because we know that they're not super duper healthy, or they haven't been as consistent as we all projected them to be at this point. Right. But if they play this inspired with the coaching staff trying to accentuate their strengths more times than their weaknesses, or their, you know, sort of in between phase where they're just maybe average at certain things, then the offense can still be functional. And the offense is number one in EPA because, you know, Orlando Brown is better than the average left tackle.
Let's hop over to the defensive side then for a little bit here, because we thought this game was going to have a lot more defensive headlines than ultimately did. It was 28-17 at halftime. The Chiefs at one point were up 21-3 early on. We could look at how the defense actually performed over the course of this. I said earlier, I'd stick by. I don't feel like this defense gave up 31 points, like chasing it down. You know, it was the way the game ended up flowing. At no point did I feel like the defense was necessarily overmatched or underwater or any of those things. But I want to ask you a question, Seth. I want to know if you've seen the pressure rate percentage of defensive tackle so far in week 4.
Oh, yes. I saw that. It was pass rush win rate or pressure rate. Yeah,
it's pass rush win rates in week 4. Seth Walder, ESPN Next Gen Stats here with the charting. I'm just going to give you a few numbers. Number 5 was a tie between Tershawn Wharton and Justin Jones of the Bears. 25% pass rush win rate. It's good for 5th best in football this week. Climb all the way up to number 3, Christian Wilkins. 29.4%. That's good for 3rd. In the NFL. Shelby Harris at number 2. An absolutely ludicrous 42.9% pass rush win rate for a defensive tackle.
He was good with the Broncos, but I mean, if you got to get Russell Wilson, I mean, I guess you got to come off Shelby Harris.
You can't win with Geno Smith. I mean, come on. This is pretty evident. But then at number 1. At number 1.
Oh.
Chris Jones. And that's not the most impressive part. The most impressive part is that Chris Jones is on the top of this chart with a defensive tackle pass rush win rate of a flat, even exact, precise, 0.050%.
50% is an...
Now, Seth, I'm not great at math, but that's every other snap.
That is an unbelievable. And they do their pass rush win rate a little bit differently than I do. It's more based, my understanding at least a little bit, is proximity to the quarterback, which makes sense. It doesn't track certain things. But it's better. It's significantly better than nothing, right? Just looking at sacks, right?
I would point to this as being a jumping off point if you would like to talk about number 95 at all,
yep,
or anything else that you want to add to kind of flesh that out. Because
sure,
a 50, when the third best rate they handed out this week was just sub 30, makes me think that there was a Chris Jones game happening in the middle.
Yeah, a 25% win rate is excellent. Really good. That's elite. That's like, if you are an elite, like you're talking, you know, edge rushers might get a little higher than that, but defensive tackles, especially 25% is absolutely elite. That is your Aaron Donald level.
And that's doing 42, that's 42 snaps on 66% of them for Tershawn Wharton at that number, by the way. Yeah. That wasn't because he only got six snaps or something. That he was out there.
Yeah, good on Wharton. Him and Saunders have kind of taken turns having some impressive performances this year. And the thing is, during the game, I actually tweeted out that I thought the Chiefs pass rush was doing a decent job, and I had a lot of fans get mad at me. Tom Brady gets rid of the ball really fast, guys. Like,
yeah.
He throws the ball very – like those final drives, there's a reason why. It's like, man, why are they just throwing the ball to the middle of the field? Don't they know they're losing by a ton? Why are they doing all these relative dink and dunks with the occasional intermediate shot? Because he could not hang on to the ball for longer than 2 seconds unless he moved around. And he had a great play where he climbed the pocket really well. But like – well, and he was only able to do it because Jones got held. Like, which, by the way, drawing a holding call like that is, although you don't lose the down, which kind of bums me out a little bit, it's very nearly as good as collecting a sack, but we don't look at it remotely the same way. And that hold was the only reason Jones didn't collect a sack there. Jones is the, right now, with the Chiefs defense, the rest of the guys, and this includes Karlaftis, who I really like, they are winning within the framework of the defense. Dunlap will occasionally win a one-on-one, but everyone else, for the most part, including Karlaftis, he's more of a, you know, crush the pocket a little bit, execute these stunts really well. Like, you can see Karlaftis figuring it out, and I think he's going to be more as his career goes on, but they don't really have any other winning one-on-one guys right now. Now, it's an interesting question. Can you have a really good pass rush if you have, you know, four or five average guys and one elite guy, and those four or five guys are really good at executing the system? Well, I think we're going to find out, because that's what it looks like. But it's all built around Chris Jones being that equalizer, that winner one-on-one, borderline constantly for a pass rusher. And it's just so cool how to watch him week in, week out. He's so good. And the defense overall, I know they gave up 31. Overall, I came away pretty good with the defense. Tom Brady had his weapons back. Overall, I know Godwin was a little bit in and out. And he is a different quarterback when he's got Godwin on the field.
But Godwin was covered effectively by LeJarius Sneed for more than half the game, Seth.
He was. And honestly, and that Godwin and Evans both made multiple catches where they were covered.
Mm-hmm.
That stinks, but it happens. Mike Evans is a beast. He's an absolute monster. But they really, like, every yard, for the most part, that the Bucs gained, they had to earn. And that's really, in the modern NFL, the best way you're going to be able to gauge that. Did it look easy, or did they have to make a good play to make it happen? That's really all you can do. That's what defense has been trying to do against Mahomes, right, the last 2 years. Force him to make 12 good plays in a row, because even Patrick Mahomes can struggle with that. Force teams to make multiple, force them to make the right read every time, force them to move off their spot a little every time because there's a little pressure, force them to run a great route, force them to make a great catch, all these things. If you do that, eventually they will crumble. And that's why, yep, the Bucs put up 31, but really when it counted, the defense held up multiple times that allowed the Chiefs to grab the big lead and then kill chances at a comeback. You know, when it's 31-17 or, you know, whatever it was, I think it was 31-17 at that point, and you force a punt. Those are when it really matters, not so much what the box score says at the end. And Chris Jones was a huge part of that.
The Bucs' last drive before the half, they scored a touchdown. They went 75 yards and took 2 minutes and 1 second. And they did it on 12 plays. Their touchdown drive after that was 11 plays. Their final touchdown drive, they got done in five. I think their first one was 6 plays. All of that to go back. I really like the idea of just, hey, view this through the lens of, did you make life difficult on the offense? And then occasionally Mike Evans was an alien sent from outer space to be 7 feet tall and just be able to jump over you. Tough. You can live with that, as you said. But it was work for Tampa. So anything you want to add on the defensive side here, Nate? Chris Jones' beat is Seth's. But what else did you see from the defense in this performance before we wrap things up here?
Yeah, I thought Juan Thornhill played well. Like we mentioned before, nothing you can really do about that penalty.
Other than you know, try to atone. The 12-game suspension is going to be a lot, but I, you know, maybe the Chiefs can come out from the other side of it. Obviously, he cannot play football for a while because of that act of violence.
Darius Harris, just solid, man. Just, he's an NFL player, and we now know that. And that's cool.
We didn't know that the Chiefs had an NFL backup linebacker for sure before the season started, just for context. We didn't know that.
And, like, I don't even have to notice Leo Chenal, and that's not Leo Chenal's fault. I just don't have to notice you because, you know, Darian Harris is an NFL player, and that's really promising because that can be even more multiple when Willie Gay comes back. I thought Brian Cook got a lot of interesting game experience because Tom Brady was like, hey, that LeJarius Sneed guy, he's really good. Hey, I know I got one-on-ones with Rashad Fenton and Mike Evans, who here's how hard it is to play DB, kids. The Bucs are driving. They're on the plus side of the field. Rashad Fenton's like, I know I have man coverage. He's Mike Evans. He's really good. I'm going to be technique sound. I'm going to take the inside. Okay, he's going to go outside. Holy smokes, he slapped me in the face. Before he caught the pass and none of y'all saw that? Like, it must be infuriating to play cornerback in this league. Where it's like, I know it's me and him. I see the formation. I see what our call is. I understand why coach called it. Cool. We gonna hit up Tom. I like it. One-on-one. Don't you even. This ball better be accurate. Take his inside leverage. Got him. Now I got to make a 45-year-old man throw the ball further to the outside. Why is he slapping me in the face? And there's no penalty.
Why?
Everybody cheers like they did something. Like, dog, he ran a 10-yard out and slapped me. And got away with it.
I'm sorry, that's so funny.
They showed it on the broadcast because I remember seeing it live in the press box being like, they're just not gonna record it. I mean, hey boys, we gotta keep it close, you know. I mean, if we push Tom backwards, then they have to pass the ball, which they're already doing, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it kills me, man, because they showed it on NBC and like Rashad was like, why is everybody cheering at my failure?
I got slapped in the face.
Now, thankfully, I was wearing a helmet, but still, man, it's embarrassing. So I just thought the defense played well. They didn't give up any chunk plays, even though Tom Brady threw the ball more than 50 times. And that is like wildly impressive. No one got behind them. So you're just making them squeeze. You're just slowly squeezing them. You're making them play the clock and the scoreboard. You don't want to give up anything big over the top. And you just want to play solid in the red zone. To Seth's point, Mike Evans just catches everything in the red zone. So good luck with that. But no, the defense was excellent in the first half. I think they were almost flawless until the final drive of the half where it was, 10-28 or whatever. And the Buccaneers scored right before halftime. But hey, you know, Jalen Watson was in the picture and that's a rookie. So
You mentioned that that Tom Brady threw the ball 52 times and they didn't run very much. Should just read the stat line. Here's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers rushing totals for the game. I'm going to go ahead and put on my glasses here. I see 6 carries for 3 yards. That's an average of 0.5 yards per carry, if my math is correct. Mm. One touchdown and a 4-yard long. Also a 3-yard long for Leonard Fournette, who actually finished the game with 3 carries for negative 3 yards, which is basically a logic problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's...
This NFL running back carried the ball 3 times. His longest run was for 3 yards. He ended the game with negative 3 yards. How many runs were his other 2 carries for?
Nick Bolton said, let me stop you right there.
Nick Bolton said, I'm actually good. I'm just gonna get you back here. That's cool. All right.
So
weird game, fun game.
Yeah.
And 3-1. That Colts game, I feel like, feels one more step away from being something to be thinking about in January, and one step closer to being the anomaly that it certainly looks like as of right now. And frankly, yes. That it looked like at that time.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes everything goes wrong, and that was such a game. And then sometimes most things go right, and we saw that on Sunday. And so it really is funny. Now all we are is a frustrating type win over the Raiders away from my prophecy of having no idea what to expect against the Bills. That's I fully expect that at this point, and I will never be really confident again because of what I do to the Chiefs. It is me. I think we've established this. When I am overly confident in a game, things go wrong. People drop punts. By the way, we did the entire podcast and we didn't mention the fact that Patrick Mahomes like broke Twitter.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really talk about that, did we? Whoops.
What can you say at this point other than it's just, I mean,
he uses the sideline. He uses the sideline as a pick man. And I don't know if people acknowledge people realize that. The boundary is supposed to be an extra defender. That's what every coach tells you. You know, if you can't get the angle, at least make him go out of bounds. But Patrick Mahomes has found the way to make the boundary the defender's problem, not the ball carrier's problem. And that is a mind trick that I'm still trying to get my head around. But when he does it, and he's very, you know, deliberate and specific, it still works. And it's like, that's not how it's supposed to work. But the league is very cognizant of we must protect all quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Not named Tua Tagovailoa. Outside of that,
we must protect the quarterbacks of 31 teams.
Tua could have someone walk onto the field and run him over with a semi. And they would be like, you know, I think he's just got a little tweaked ankle.
You know, he's left-handed. It looks different coming out of his hand. It's hard to say for sure. That has created,
you know, I feel bad for the original poster of the Tua turned right-handed thing, because that did kind of blow my mind a little.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And now people are being so mean, and it's so funny.
Some people were, and I love that we're being vague about who people are. And not about any particular person on this podcast who immediately, of course, considered deleting it like 5 minutes later when I was worried. I mean, when that person was worried about his literal life. It's a weird Thursday night football experience for all of us. I mean, for all of the people that were partaking.
He's going to take some time off. Glad that we're making better decisions now versus previously.
Put that man in a beach chair, like just in some nice thick sunglasses.
Yeah, we hope he stays healthy. We hope he gets a chance to play well under the right circumstances. But yeah, for everybody else, it's like, again, another example of maybe Patrick's ahead of his peers in thinking that, like, well, the defender is so terrified of pushing me out of bounds, which will cause a flag. But even in that case, like, they're already at the 2-yard line, Levante. Just push him out of bounds, dog. but under normal circumstances, the defender is so terrified to push the quarterback out of bounds for fear of a penalty that all of a sudden the boundary becomes the pick man. It becomes a man that removes the screaming defender in a way that has never happened before in the history of the NFL. And Mahomes is I think the best at figuring that out and then buying more time to just, you know, do wizard, wizard like stuff. So it's, yeah, I mean, Andy Reid looked me right in the eye after the game and said, "You guys can't take this for granted." And I was like, "But coach, like, I've seen it like 5 seasons now." like, I get it, but like, I also have to acknowledge that, like, I have a catalog that is continuing to grow in my memory of 5 years worth of this stuff. So I'm not saying I'm taking it for granted. I'm just saying that, like, yeah, it's pretty good. But the boundary is just an extra. It's no longer a defender when it comes to Mahomes.
Let's wrap it up there. We went a little long, but it was a primetime game. That game went a little long. Nate went to Tampa for it. They just had a hurricane, and it's been busy, you know? So hopefully no one complains about a little extra free time czars with your order here today. You can read both of the works of both of these fellas, of course, at theathletic.com and on the Chief in the North newsletter for Seth, and then chiefsfan.substack.com. If you're not subscribed to this podcast, I mean, you might as well. You made it all the way. You made it to the end of this episode, maybe our longest episode ever. So I feel like you ought to just hit subscribe. Maybe tell a friend about it, tweet about it, however you see fit. Appreciate all the kind words to get about the show out in the wild. It's a surprisingly frequent occurrence for what this show is. So thanks to everybody who is joining us for yet another, I'm sure, going to be high-octane season. We'll be back again later in the week to look ahead to Chiefs Raiders. We'll do that this week. We'll Monday night game there. We'll figure out when our post game show ends up being. Probably Tuesday. We'll figure it out. I don't know. I love remembering on the show that we need to change our schedule because they can't stop putting the Chiefs in prime time, which is really putting years on our lives. But it's fun to have the option of the Chiefs being the standalone game, taking over Twitter, etc. for those exact types of Patrick Mahomes moments. Seth, you got anything you want to fire off here, or can we let Nate put a bow on this one?
I just wanted to let everyone know this is all opinion.